the Gremlin. From a murky piece of Chinese folklore to alleged World War II aerial battles and to the silver screen, these strange entities have infested our imaginations. But is there a potential reality to these mischievous critters beyond the tongue-in-cheek news articles and propaganda of the 40s? Were gremlins in reality a unique manifestation of trickster phenomena, particularly prone in this incarnation to affect machinery and technology, and perhaps even living in the air? Welcome to this special members episode release of Belief Hole. If you'd like to become a member for more full-length episodes like this, click the link in the show notes to join the expansion. And now, please enjoy this expansion episode from Season 3, Real Encounters with Gremlins.
Because you never can tell. There just might be a gremlin in your house.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, man. Iconic
music. This is like childhood nectar right now.
It is.
That's a definite band name.
Childhood Nectar.
For those of you who don't know, this is the Gremlins theme from Gremlins.
The movie Gremlins.
Yeah.
The end credits of the first film, I believe. That's where you get that wonky synthesizer going in there.
It sounds like they're singing.
Man, what a good movie, dude. There are a lot of weird movies like that.
Did you know that PG-13 rating was created because of Gremlins 2? The violence in it?
No, it was Gremlins 1.
Was it Gremlins 1?
It was after it had come out, I think.
There were like two actual on-screen deaths where gremlins murdered people.
Really?
They didn't want kids like wandering in thinking it was like a
G-rated movie.
Right, because it's got puppets and...
I mean, I can't believe that there weren't more violent movies before that point, though.
But there were. I think this was a weird mix between childhood, like there's puppets and there's a lot of kind of gaggy stuff in there, like funny gag stuff.
Yeah.
But there was enough violence where it was like, this is a little too dark.
Now kids are like, Slender Man.
Right. Yeah, now they have YouTube and they can see this stuff all the time. But
yeah.
I don't know if you remember this, John. There was a really dark scene in that movie.
The first one?
Yeah, do you remember? I think Billy was the guy, right?
Mm-hmm.
His love interest, I forget her name. I want to say Jennifer because that's all 80s girlfriends in movies. She tells that story about why she hates Christmas. You remember that? She goes in this long story, maybe we'll drop a clip, but essentially saying that I hate Christmas because of my dad. Because one year he dressed up as Santa Claus and
he get like stuck in the chimney.
We didn't know where he went. And it wasn't until like days later that there was a smell.
I was 9 years old. The house was freezing. So I went to try to light up the fire. And that's when I noticed the smell. The firemen came and broke through the chimney top. And me and Mom were expecting them to pull out a dead cat or a bird. And instead, they pulled out my father.
Oh.
He was dressed in a Santa Claus suit. He'd been climbing down the chimney on Christmas Eve, his arms loaded with presents. He was going to surprise us. He slipped and broke his neck. Died instantly. And that's how I found out there was no Santa Claus.
Pretty disturbing.
Dark, dude. Yeah. That's worse than the violence. Like that kind of psychological trauma.
Sure,
father dying in the chimney.
Well, maybe not, but definitely similar levels.
It would affect you for a while.
80s movies had those awesome little monologues where they would tell a sort of unsettling story within the story. Like the Burbs had that scene with Art where
he's talking about Skip, the ice cream guy, right?
Who's murdered his wife with an ice pick and no one found the bodies for weeks or whatever. It's the same kind of idea.
There was a smell that summer. Drifted throughout the neighborhood.
Real bad.
No one knew where it came from. But old Skip still serving ice cream for the kiddies. Man. Great 80s stuff. But this is not a Gremlins movie review, but it does tie in. Anyways.
All right, let's get to the real Gremlins, Jer.
Because you mentioned the third, and yes, this is taking a while to get into the meat, the content. It's coming up. We got real folklore connections, true encounters with Gremlins, allegedly. What are Gremlins? Are they just an old story retold under a new name? Are they reminiscent of the Domovoy or the Brownie? These kind of house fairies?
Are they propaganda?
World War II? Are they simply World War II propaganda under a different name? Anyways, we're going to get into a lot of that stuff. Some real encounters that are pretty interesting. I dug deep on this. You have to
dig deep on Gremlins. Gremlins.
If you want to find something tangible. And I did find something interesting and it kind of, well, we'll get to it.
You had to hack the internet to find something corroborative.
I watched Matrix 2 and that allowed me to hack the internet. I plugged in.
So what do we have on the docket today for the Gremlin show? The real juicy material.
That's interesting you say material, John, because the more I research the Gremlin, the more I find that they are not solely material, actually. Which is kind of interesting. When you read the encounters.
Interdimensional nomads.
Interdimensional, but specifically their form that you hear. And this would actually kind of pique my interest in it is in several accounts, including that of Charles Lindbergh.
That's right.
the famous pilot. These often appear wispy. They are biphasal, multiformal, transphasic, however you want to refer to it. They're like clouds, essentially, in the sense that they seem to exist almost atmospheric and material at different times. Mm-hmm. Wispy, kind of gin-like, which is really interesting.
Yeah, it's a new dimension to the gremlin idea.
And I like the idea, especially because if you look at some of the World War II propaganda, there were like manuals on how to deal with gremlins that mm-hmm. are kind of like tongue-in-cheek, obviously. Like, this gremlin lives in the electrical box, and this gremlin eats the gasoline. And
weird.
That seems very tongue-in-cheek, especially they had cartoons form and stuff, so obviously that was not taken too seriously. But when you get to people's descriptions beyond like the Snow White and the Seven Dwarves type, you know, meddling little people, they end up being pretty creepy. And they're reminiscent of other folkloric entities that people have had encounters with throughout time that we've touched on the show a lot. So yeah. Could this have been something people experienced in World War II when we first started? I think World War II, I was reading this World War II history blog, and someone was saying that it was like planes in the sky at that time. It was unprecedented, obviously, yeah. because of the war, if that's true or not, but that's what it said. And it made me think, like, if there are things up there, say that's where these things live, if there could be these kind of half material, half energetic, living in the ether, coming in and out, but flying on the atmosphere, is mm-hmm. there something that these people might have experienced? Could be good or bad. Could be neutral.
Yeah.
Tricksters, mischief makers. And that's kind of the description we get from these things.
Yeah, I think it's an interesting conversation because obviously there's tons of literature out there that's from the Allies during the war mm-hmm. where it's obviously like satirical. You can easily, quickly, skeptically just wash it away as all fabrication by the powers
right.
involved in the war.
Yeah.
But at the same time, there are aspects to these things that relate to traditions and mythology across the centuries.
Yeah, did people just carry their old world traditions?
Charles Lindbergh's is interesting, and we've covered him on the show for two different topics because he had his pretty fantastical out-of-body experience mm-hmm. with a silver cord in flight. And then he had...
It kind of relates to that.
I think we talked about him on Otherworldly Music. I think he had a story about that as well.
I think he heard a lot up there. Mm-hmm. In the sky. And also involves sleep deprivation. So there's an interesting connection if you guys heard my smoke monster story where yeah. I was sleep deprived and that filter broke, or at least that's what it seemed like. Yeah. Very similar.
Looking at these gremlins remind me a lot of DMT elves.
Machine elves.
Clockwork elves.
Yeah, that's yeah. kind of reminds me of.
But these are nasty.
Actually, yeah, I didn't put that together, but also I was thinking about the physical aspects of these things, but I forgot about the tinkering, right? Like the machine elves, they're called machine elves, the DMT elves,
exactly.
because they're seen like manipulating things, tinkering around. Gremlins, that's their thing. That's their shtick. More than any other like elf or gnome or brownie, these things are always messing with specifically mechanized machines.
Yeah.
You know, not cobbling shoes.
And to get into what they are a little bit here, the attributes of the gremlin, they have that superhuman proficiency with machines of all types, it seems like. Specifically with the air gremlin that we experienced in World War II, the reports of them being able to adhere to the outer fuselage of planes, withstand incredible temperatures, high altitudes, and the way they look, it varies a lot. Like I said, there's that kind of little people, elf type, old world
Disney
description.
Kind of thing.
Yeah, wearing red trousers and pointy shoes. That description seems to be the more tongue-in-cheek, but then there are accounts where they're more animalistic with hairy bodies, large pointed ears, deep red glowing eyes.
More like the film.
More like the Twilight Zone movie with John Lithgow, where he's on the wing.
Oh, yeah.
Patchy hair, gray body, sharp, gnarly teeth, and
three
glowing
or four
red
feet
eyes.
Tall.
Yeah, that's a classic.
Oh, yeah, so freaky.
Do we have that scene?
You want me to pull it up now?
Let's do
Let's
it,
pull this
sir.
Up. Guys, this will be in the show notes.
Follow along.
All right, you guys won't be able to see this because you can't see with your ears.
You can see it with your mind's eye.
Well, they'll have it in the notes.
Have it in the notes, and we won't take up too much time with this. But we wanted to play it and just kind of reminisce because this is interesting. It's interesting that there's one specific account that may be the most credible, and it most closely paints a picture of this kind of gremlin.
Yeah.
This really freaky John Lithgow Twilight Zone, there's something on the wing.
Or Shatner.
Nightmare 20,000 Feet. Yeah, Shatner was the original in the original Twilight Zone version of this, but it is really freaky. We're going to roll this clip.
John Lithgow looks almost as scary as the gremlin. How smart, grab that Polaroid camera.
Oh, yeah. So by this point in the movie, this is after he's seen it a few times, no one believed him. And now the plane's going down and he's trying to get proof of it, right? That it's on the wing.
Nothing would come out because there's a flash in the window. There's a flash on that camera.
Yeah, a reflection. That is the freakiest moment.
So terrifying.
Oh, yeah.
He like holds his claws up and then jams it into. What's so beautiful about this scene is you can't see.
You can barely see it.
You can see the outline of this thing on the wing and like the sparks and everything, but you can't make it out really.
It's such a freaky idea too.
Taking out the engines.
Just pure demonic, this yeah. version of the gremlin.
Yeah, he's a sadist.
Yeah. Yeah, John Lithgow going insane.
I mean, this is pretty close to the stories that were told by the people in the war.
Some of
the pilots that took it a little more seriously.
And a lot of that, you know, goes to the question of, was it a psychological issue with low pressure, sleep deprivation?
I'm gonna shoot that window.
So John got shot out the window and then got sucked halfway out the window. This is intense.
Chris, do you think you'd be scared if you were in this position?
No. I would already be passed out from terror.
Chris loves flying.
Oh, yes.
Bloop. He's on the... Oh, he's out.
Oh.
It looks like Goro. Predator.
Or Goro.
It's freaky. Much freakier than the original black and white William Shatner.
Oh, yeah. That looks like a dumb Yeti.
Yeah.
That's awesome.
Awesome puppet, dude.
Yeah.
It's all mechanical, that face. Was this pre-Gremlins movie? It must have been, right?
I think so.
This isn't... What year was this? I think it says in the title. 83. Yeah, this is a year before Gremlins came out.
Gumlins.
Gumlins.
You said that earlier.
I didn't say anything.
Gremlins without teeth. Just gum you.
That's funny.
They're nursing home gremlins.
Okay.
I think we know what happens next.
They make it home okay for Christmas.
Yep.
Yeah.
So this came out a year before the film.
Does it fly away?
It like rolls away into the sky.
Weird.
Well, that's what they were said to do too. They flew among the clouds.
I believe it.
Yeah.
Yeah. You know, I don't know how I feel about it, honestly. Well, we're going to get into that because we have some real encounters, not just made for TV. But it's important to note that those are inspired by allegedly real encounters by, you know, World War II and World War I.
There is, to complicate things, there were people writing fiction propaganda about Gremlins during the war, so it confuses the issue.
Well, the thing was, this was something that people were experiencing pre-fiction. This was something that the early stories came out over India from the Royal Air Force in World War I. That's where the legend kind of began, the mythology.
I heard that mentioned. Is that true?
Yeah, that's true. You know, and there's some suspicion. How many stories actually came out at the time? Was it just one? There's a question on, was the guy in the original writing of that, of his account, was it tongue-in-cheek about drinking? Because there is a...
Doesn't it come out of a beer bottle?
There's a brewery called Fremlin. And actually, one of the sources of the word gremlin, it's kind of a murky history of where the etymology actually is. You have the Old English gremen or gremain, which is to anger or enrage. Old High German, and in the Norse, it's gremja. So the idea of like mischief, to anger, to, you know, basically vex is another definition. And then you have the confusion. There's a RAF or Royal Air Force Bomber Command unit in India. The other idea is that they coined the word by combining Grimm's fairy tales, which Grimm also comes from that same gremen, and Fremlin beer, the only brand available in India
at
the time. So the idea that they were either from pilots drinking or just a metaphor for things going wrong. And then, there is the idea that it became a scapegoat. You know, don't blame your co-pilot. Don't blame the people working with you. To keep morale high, you could blame it on the gremlin. You know, like things going wrong. And then we've had that kind of tongue-in-cheek folklore references since this time where you'd be like, oh, there's a gremlin on the TV. It's not turning on, you know, freaking gremlins. But you do have the real encounters too.
Yeah. Going back to the thing about pilots drinking, what I don't understand about that time period, you see this in like Disney movies too, like The Elephant.
Oh, Dumbo.
Dumbo. But you see drinking causes hallucinations and all the, you know what I mean? Like, I don't understand that. Well, he must have been drunk because he saw little beings come out of his beer bottle.
Right.
It's like, who sees that when they're drunk?
That's a good point, yeah.
Like, I've never seen a hallucination when intoxicated.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? With alcohol, at least. I mean, maybe if you're drinking like engine fuel or something or turpentine.
Yeah.
But if you're drinking, especially beer, it's not a very hard drink, you know? I mean, there are hard beers, but doesn't that seem weird? That's always like, oh, that guy must have had too many. He saw a vampire in an alley or an alien. I never understood that.
It is weird. I don't get that either. Was there something different about alcohol back then? But there's that Bleak House, that story. Was that
Charles Dickens?
I saw the miniseries or whatever with Scully. But one of the characters spontaneously combusts, and it's because he drank too much high potency alcohol. Yeah. He was an alcoholic, so he melted from the inside.
You found him
dead, Your Honor. Burnt. A small part of him still alight with blue flame playing round about.
Like a Christmas pudding in a pool of brandy.
Exactly so, Your Honor. Except I believe in this case it was in fact gin.
All right, Mr. Guppy, you may stand down. Gentlemen of the jury, the deceased was an habitual consumer of vast amounts of spirituous liquor, which, as we know, is highly flammable. I believe this is an example of that rarest of phenomena, a case of spontaneous combustion.
Yeah. What happened to that phenomenon? Spontaneous combustion was a big thing.
We don't drink the same alcohol we used to. There was something really weird about the alcohol people were drinking.
Anyway, back to the gremlins.
But yeah, we talk about all the malevolent gremlins. They weren't always malevolent, though. Just like the brownie or the domovoy, however you say it, the kind of Russian house spirit that would either protect or cause mischief, depending on if you kept it happy or not, fed it. Similar kind of attributes. But one curious belief about the gremlin was that before the 20th century, gremlins are actually attributed with helping out mankind with many of its major technological discoveries.
Oh, really?
I.e. Prometheus giving the fire. Interestingly, they're credited with helping invent the steam engine, and also, and this is interesting, assisting Benjamin Franklin with his work with electricity. Discovering electricity. And what's interesting about that, John, do you remember when Benjamin Franklin, when they found all those bones under his house?
Yeah, I was there.
He led the search team.
They're my
no,
bones.
No, I don't.
I was looking for my bones. You don't remember that? We talked about that in an early, I think it was a Saturn Death
Cult. The Hellfire Club, I thought.
The Hellfire Club.
Oh, yeah, okay.
So there's an article about the bones found under Benjamin Franklin's house. It was like bones belonging to up to 15 different people.
Yeah.
Found under there. And then you have the Hellfire Club and the question of cult sacrifice. And it reminded me of the Nazis and the legend and lore of them making sacrifices, working with black magic and the occult to connect with the other side, mm-hmm. another dimension to get technology. And I mentioned this kind of in the main episode as a preview, but the idea that maybe there was a deal made with this other side for technology during World War II, that's an idea going back. But then you also have, I mean, it's silly, but what if when we got the technology, we also got these entities, or not we, but say the Nazis got it as a way to destroy the Allies' technology. So you have them attacked more than the Axis.
So gremlins being a contracted interdimensional race contracted by the Axis powers?
Exactly.
To attack Allies'
And interestingly,
forces. That's insane.
So the Benjamin Franklin idea, what if those bones under his house were used in some kind of gremlin sacrifice? To connect with the gremlin world, and now he has access. It's just weird.
Oh my.
I know, this is really ridiculous, but he discovered electricity. Why are gremlins credited with that?
Well, who's crediting them with that?
Well, things that I read.
What
I read it in multiple
these?
Places.
Because what I heard was the word gremlin and the whole gremlin concept, specifically under that label, was World War II when that first started. Maybe World War I a little bit. There was like that one report or something.
Uh-huh.
But you're saying things like gremlins were attributed?
Yeah, I'm not saying specifically
gremlins.
Or was
this in the propaganda of the war, like kind of attaching a made-up mythology?
I don't know where this idea originally comes from. I think it was a witness, someone that worked for Benjamin Franklin, came out as a whistleblower.
Okay.
I mean, it's an interesting idea.
Yeah.
You know, along these lines, I came across a comment on an article about gremlins. Someone whose personal experience, allegedly, I'm going to read this.
Allegedly.
We talked about that yesterday.
I did.
Oh, I did want to say John Lithgow's made it into two expansions in a row. Harry and the Hendersons?
Oh, yeah.
Twilight Zone.
That's how we should guide our topic choice for the expansion episodes.
It's a Lithgow synchronicity.
Okay, so this is what I found. Where do gremlins come from along this
gremlins.
Line?
Gremlins. Is it hard to not say gremlins?
You said gumlins.
That's true.
Gumlins.
There's gremlins in our mouths messing up our words.
I like it. We'll keep that from now on. Anytime we mess up, it'll be a gumlin.
I like it.
We'll blame it on. So gremlins, where do they come from? And I wanted to explore this occult connection. I didn't get a chance to get too deep in because that's the whole topic itself, the Nazi connection with the occult and talking to the other side. But I like the gremlin twist. I think that's interesting. So I came across along those lines, this comment on an article called Gremlins on Attack that'll be in the show notes. And this is just it's dubious. It's an anonymous comment, but I thought it was weird because it's the only place I saw that tie-in with my theory of the gremlins being occulted or brought in by occult means. From access powers, just that specific theory.
Yeah.
So this is cool. My dad was in the Navy, 1942 to 1946, and I inherited some of his books, including a little book called Japan and the Japanese, published by the Infantry Journal. It's a book intended to help our fighting men understand the enemy. And I'm sure probably not super accurate, but
right,
this is interesting. In that book, there is a picture taken probably a few years before the war of some Japanese warlord holding something in his lap. You can't see the whole thing, but it looks like the top of a Western-style pentagram. What is a Japanese warlord doing with Western witchcraft symbols? Right before World War II, we know that the Nazis were occult-obsessed. Perhaps the Japanese were too. At any rate, I'll bet that's where the gremlins came from. They're released by enemy witchcraft. It was just weird because that was my exact theory.
Creepy thought.
Isn't it?
Yeah.
And that was my thought. See, I mean, John likes it when someone else comments
sense.
It. Yeah, it does make sense. But I mean, I don't know if the pentagram is a Western symbol specifically.
Yeah.
I mean, there are a lot of, Eastern cult symbols.
Well, it all comes from ancient culture.
Yeah, well, it's a pagan symbol.
The pentagram dates back to 3500 BC, Mesopotamia, believed to have magical properties. This star has been used in ancient China and Japan to symbolize the five elements of life.
Plus, I mean, the Japanese don't really need to borrow Western witchcraft ideas. Uh-huh. They have plenty of demon lore and things like that.
Well, yeah. Yeah, there's a lot of symbolism that we take for granted as a modern right. or Western, like the swastika, obviously, right. is one example where it was like a good luck symbol. Every ancient culture had it. It would be in the West before World War II and the Nazis took it. It was...
Yeah, Hitler co-opted it, tilted it. Although there are tilted versions in ancient cultures too, but it was always a good emblem. They right. perversed it. Now it's like the sign of evil.
For them, it wasn't a sign of evil. Obviously, they were doing it for power.
Right.
You know, but they thought power for good because that was their mindset. But in America, we had coins with swastikas on it up until the war, you mm-hmm. know, like that we used passed around like it was a good luck charm. I just thought that was interesting. But anyway, so yeah, this is just, it's a dubious comment. Maybe very well that he saw this and everything, but it doesn't prove anything, obviously. I just think it goes to my interesting theory.
I like it.
That the gremlins come from another dimension brought here by occult means from the Axis powers.
Definitely an interesting topic. We talked about that before, the idea of the Axis powers, the Germans specifically trying to contact another dimension. Yeah, mm-hmm. about using a cult. We should do an episode specifically on that. I know you guys talked about the tube, although I don't think you could really find anything on it, right? But you heard it somewhere.
The cathode ray tube?
Yeah. That'd be interesting to look into more.
Reminds me of Army of Darkness and the Necronomicon.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Necronomicon. Was that a real book? I'm trying to remember.
No.
I didn't think it was. So. And then I remember reading something.
No, it was H.P. Lovecraft.
H.P. Lovecraft. Right? That's right. It was kind of based off the Egyptian Book of the Dead, mm-hmm. that kind of concept.
That's a real book.
There's several books of the dead.
Yeah.
That are real from different cultures.
The Tibetan Book of the Dead.
Tibetan Book mm-hmm. of the Dead.
I was talking about that the other day.
Oh, really?
Mm-hmm. Mike brought it up in our conversation.
I was going to say, where were you out about talking about the Tibetan Book of the Dead? Oh, down at the gym here in the sauna.
Yeah, no.
This reminds me of an inner palace of the underworld.
Interesting, though. I'm definitely going to look into it more.
The Tibetan Book of the Dead. See, I think it'd be cool to do stuff on that.
Mm-hmm. You know? It's interesting. It has a name. It's like a TH something. What is the name?
It'd be fun to do a comparative look at different books of the dead from mm-hmm. ancient cultures.
Yeah, definitely.
Thodol? Bardo Thodol?
Oh, that's the name of it?
I think so. Bardo Thodol, commonly known in the West as the Tibetan Book of the Dead, is a term of text from a larger corpus of teachings. It kind of reminds me of the near-death experience.
Oh, yeah.
It has similar tones.
Does it give you like a guide?
It kind of gives you, I think, I don't know for sure, but things that could happen, mm-hmm. possibilities.
Oh, like to be prepared a little bit?
Yeah, just kind of like what you might be able to expect in some instances.
That'd be a great episode because the Egyptian Book of the Dead is similar where it's, this is sort of what to expect. These are the trials you're going to have to overcome based on your life decisions, things like that. And it describes the sort of maze of things. It'd be fun to do a comparison on those.
It's more like a pamphlet or brochure.
Mm-hmm. For sure. Come on in.
Which is kind of
funny. We'll go over your options here. Well, you guys want to do a story?
Yes,
one of the encounters of a real gremlin.
Let's do it.
Now, this story, this is interesting because this is the one I wanted to find the most. I found an article, and when you look for gremlin stuff, you're going to get several stories, and only a handful, kind of repeated mm-hmm. throughout blogs, just copy-pasted, which is kind of frustrating. And I found one on Mysterious Universe because I found it through Skeptoid. Skeptoid was obviously debunking the gremlin phenomenon, saying, well, these stories are made up. There's no real person that told this story. There's no real background. And one that he mentioned was one from Mysterious Universe by Brett Swanser, which was... an account by an older gentleman. I don't know if Brent mentioned his age in the thing, but he's a 92-year-old veteran of World War II, allegedly at the time of this report, his writing of his experience. And what Brian Dunning on Skeptoid said was, quote, this story first appeared on the Mysterious Universe website in 2015. No sources given, and I was unable to find any earlier publication of the story.
But you found it, right?
But I dug deeper.
You redeemed Brent.
He said, in all logical respects, we can consider it fictitious.
Right.
But I dug deeper. And that's not the original source. Even though on MU, they didn't cite the original source. I found the original on archive.org, where they archive old web pages that have gone down. This was from Cryptozoology News. It comes from Jonesboro, Arkansas, and was reported by Michael Bachman a year before the MU article came out in February of 2014. So there is some credible sourcing of this story.
It's sad to me that Skeptoid, which is renowned, mm-hmm. you know, I mean, it's a well-known site for this sort of writing, couldn't do what you did. Well, like, I look a little harder to find the source.
I really want gremlins to be real. I really want gremlins to be real. So I looked harder to disprove the skeptic. That's what you want to do when you're trying to argue for something. You want to dig harder than someone who's...
Especially if you're biased, like you.
Yeah. Well, it's not even that I necessarily believe in gremlins, but I... I'll do everything I can to prove it in case it is real. And if it's not, you know, that's totally fine.
But you want to turn over every stone.
Yeah. If there's any grain of truth behind this legend, this mythology, I want to find it. Right. You know, that's what makes life fun, It's that
hunt.
That
makes a good researcher, Jer. Good work. Yay!
But anyways, to get back to our story, this comes from a man by the name of LW, and this is obviously his story name. We don't know his full name. He's 92 years old, grew up in Arkansas, and was a pastor's kid. And of course, we have to take it at face value that there was this person, LW, unless it was made up by Michael Bachman, reporter for Cryptozoology News. And maybe, but...
So was it submitted to Michael Bachman? He worked for Cryptozoology News?
Yeah, and he interviewed LW.
Okay, so that's the source of the story.
This is the source. So it's up to you to decide whether or not this is real. And this article is entitled, World War II Pilot Speaks Out, Gremlins Are Real. So his dad was a pastor, Episcopal preacher, from Arkansas, which kind of influenced his decision to become a pilot.
My father loved planes. When you were a preacher's kid, well, you either turn out a little angel or a complete demon. I kind of went in between and decided to fight for my country instead. I got wings, but I was no angel.
He told Cryptozoology News, LW says these little beings were capable of attaching themselves to the fuselage and withstand high altitudes.
Oh, they're real, all right. They'd climb inside the aircraft and hide in there, or hook up under the wings. I'm sure they were sabotaging most of the Allies' machinery. I was a B-17 pilot. We were all young. I was 21 years old, and I was a flight commander. That was the average age for the officers. The gunners were usually 18 years old. We were very sharp, clean kids.
One day, LW says he was flying a combat mission when the unexpected happened. Reportedly, a pair of gremlins tried to crash the B-17 Flying Fortress.
So I am very aware of my surroundings. And as I go higher, I notice an unusual sound coming from the engine. The instruments went nuts. I look at my right and I see an entity staring at me. Then I look at the aircraft's nose, and there it is, another one. Hanging in there, dancing lizards.
That's an awesome description.
Not funny. It's terrifying.
It is very terrifying. The astonished pilot thought that maybe he was having an episode of spatial disorientation and hallucinations.
But I was perfectly fine. My senses were in good shape, but the weird things were still there looking at me. They kept going at it, pounding the plane with all their might. That'd be scary as hell.
Right? LW says the creatures were 3 foot tall and had a hairless gray skin. The eyes were of a deep red color, and their mouths were so big he could... would almost count their teeth. The ears were long and pointy, with a small black patch of hair growing on the tips that remind the witness of, quote, an owl's ear.
That's pretty specific.
They appeared to be laughing at me, with their big mouths open, looking at me, hitting the plane with their long arms, trying to pull stuff. I have no doubt in my mind they were trying to crash it. I managed to stabilize the flight, and I saw the critters falling off the aircraft. I don't know if they fell and died, or if they jumped from my plane to a different one. I have no f***ing idea.
So we'll just believe it? LW couldn't believe what he had seen, so when he went back to the base, he tried to keep the incident a secret.
Well, I had to tell my best friend, a young kid named Leroy. He was a gunner. Oh, he believed me. He said he had seen something similar a few days earlier during a training exercise. But he was afraid to tell an officer about it for fears of being sent back to the U.S. We wanted to fight. We didn't want to be the ones coming back empty-handed, you know.
At first, he says he believed what he saw was, quote, some sort of soldier developed by the Japanese. But then years later, in 1947, he came to a different conclusion.
One day, I read the news about a strange aircraft crashing in Roswell, New Mexico. So I say, what the hell? That's the same people that got on my plane. Now they're trying to attack our country, too? I thought that if they were capable of building this type of advanced technology, oh boy, I thought we were done. Who knows what else they can do?
It took LW over 70 years to come forward and tell his story to the public.
Well, we were young and careless, fearless. We were, you know... free birds.
Well read.
Yeah, that's really pretty interesting.
Yeah.
And it's interesting that this is, for instance, this account, this is the full account. Every other place you'll hear a summarized paragraph of this. So
right.
Believefully, you get the original.
You should post a blog about this.
I will. This account should live somewhere online and not right. Just in the archive. But it is interesting. If there are stories like this, which, you know, there are, it has to be up to you to decide whether or not there's reality to this. Mm-hmm. But it would be interesting if we still had World War II veterans around to ask them if, because if this was real, if there was something happening up there, entities that were somehow provoked because of our activity in the sky, there may have been a lot of accounts I've read that there were hundreds of reports and people were nervous to talk about it. And they developed the propaganda as kind of a way to alleviate the tension about it and make it more of a joke because they didn't want people nervous.
Like the governor of New Mexico with the fake alien head after the Phoenix Lights.
Yeah, exactly.
What a turd.
Hey, he came back and, you know.
We did?
Yeah, he was in a part of the Disclosure Project, admitting that he was just trying to break the tension, but he actually saw it.
Little turd.
It was a turdy thing to do. But yeah, was there something happening? I don't know how many stories there were. Like I said, it's extremely hard to find.
Yeah, definitely one of the most fantastical to think about in that way as being possibly real. And because, again, of so much literature written in a satirical way, it's really hard to parse that out and find anything that could potentially be real accounts.
Right.
But that was a good one.
Especially if you're afraid to report it to your superiors, mm-hmm. you're afraid to talk about it. We didn't have the internet. News was controlled to a certain degree at that time. What information remains, what stories are passed down. So most stories you find on comments, blogs, and things like that are, my father told me this about gremlins or what he heard, how much of it was believed by the people. And you hear reports that they were actually believed by thousands of pilots at the time, but we don't know for sure because we can't really ask those people.
What was the Lindbergh story? Do we have that
one? Well, we still have several stories.
Can we take a break though?
All right, let's take a break.
Let's do it.
All right, we'll take a quick break and we get back. We got some more allegedly true encounters with gremlins. So hang in there.
Hello, friends.
Hi.
Welcome back to The Hole.
So we didn't see any gremlins in the toilet hole when you were taking your toilet break.
Weird.
It was weird, Jeremy.
I guess that was Critters, huh?
Yeah,
Critters. The movie cover that had the toilet bowl?
Yeah.
Did you know Critters was inspired by the Kelly Hopkinsville encounter?
I did.
Isn't that interesting?
Mm-hmm. Which I want to do in depth someday.
In the cryptozoological news article that we read, the story of LW earlier, at the end of that article, he says that these creatures were similar to that very account, the Kelly Hopkinsville.
A really fun, fascinating, kind of terrifying story.
The Critters movie setup, from what I know of it, is that it's like a small town where these aliens essentially invade, these goblin-like aliens
it's
and attack.
Woods. Yeah.
So it was heavily inspired, the Critters movie, which is interesting.
Yeah, and there's a lot of debate around it. It would be a fun one to do. So let's do it.
I'm in.
Excellent. Yes.
Well, coming back for the break, I thought we would just quickly mention, since this is, I mean, we are the generation of the 80s, right? We grew up, we were born in 84, John was 81. So 80s weighs a lot on us. And of course, the gremlins and Mogwai. Mogwai is a term floated around about. But I just thought it was interesting because when I was looking at the gremlins thing, Mogwai is a real term. Mm-hmm. I didn't realize. Apparently, it's Cantonese, which is a form of Chinese, and it means monster. Essentially,
it's part of their demonology, right?
I thought that Mogwai was just made up for the movie.
Mm-mm.
I didn't realize that it's actually, so that's kind of cool. I've heard reports that they're shape-shifting type creatures. The term Mo from Mogwai derives from Sanskrit Mara, meaning evil beings, or literally death. Meanwhile, Gwai classically simply implies deceased spirits or souls of the dead. Nevertheless, in modern Chinese, it has evolved to refer to usually the dead spirits or ghosts of non-family members that may take vengeance on the living humans who caused them pain when they were still living. But put that together, you get Mogwai.
Yeah.
It's kind of interesting.
It's funny you think about that opening scene where he's looking for a gift and he's like, it's a Mogwai. Oh, that's an adorable name, Mogwai.
The guy's probably thinking like, you don't know Cantonese.
It means monster. Do you want to buy this monster for your child?
Yeah, that's pretty funny. Interestingly, the other thing you come across if you try to do any gremlins research on your own, guys, or any research on the Mogwai, there's also not a lot out there, at least in English, about this stuff.
Isn't there some controversy around the Mogwai thing itself?
Well, so the little blurb I see quoted everywhere, it's like the one thing in Wikipedia that's kind of interesting, the connection to like the lore in gremlins, like is the reality behind it, was that they were, well, I'll just read this little blurb
this
here.
Yeah, this is cool.
According to Chinese tradition, Mogwai are certain demons which often inflict harm on humans. They are said to reproduce sexually during mating seasons triggered by the coming of rain.
Ah, just like don't get them wet.
Exactly. Supposedly, they take care to breed at these times because rain signifies rich and full times ahead. Now, the source of that is linked in Wikipedia to this article from the Carleton College, Northfield, written by Qiguang Zhao. And it's all about the basically like mythology in China when it relates to like water deities. It's called Chinese mythology in the context of a hydraulic society. So I was like, oh, that's awesome. They're going to talk about like Mogwai in here and how like their breeding season is in the rainy season. I don't know if it's just because this portion is the only thing available online, but it did not mention Mogwai.
Oh, really?
So I don't know if that's whoever submitted that. It's weird that someone would be like, I'm going to make add some reality behind the lore of Gremlins and add this random esoteric water god study from China and put it in here as like evidence and no one's going to notice. It's just weird.
Well, if anybody else finds that,
if anyone here connection. Speaks Cantonese or is Chinese and knows some Mogwai stories, please write in.
Yes.
So okay, let's get back to the real stuff, the Gremlins.
Are we going to do Charles Lindbergh?
Oh, yeah. You know, I skipped that one.
You did.
But we could. Let's do that one. And then we have a couple more that we'll kind of wrap the episode up with, get into some real more modern accounts.
Cool.
One coming from a pastor who's had a friend who told him some stories from more modern situation. And then we had someone who experienced this in the suburban streets of whatever town she lives in.
Oh, that's interesting.
So let's do it. Let's do the Charles Lindbergh. And this is interesting because this is goes to the concept of like, what are they made out of? Sometimes they do appear like misty, mm-hmm. kind of half material, half like cloudy. And the description reminds me of my smoke monster experience. You guys might remember that from me telling the story a few times, but...
You just said it on the last show.
That's right. If you listened to the last episode on the main feed, the Confessionals crossover, I talked about it there. But you'll hear some interesting characteristics of this story that parallel it very oddly. Mm-hmm. Okay, so who wants to read this one?
I'm good at reading.
Let's do you, John.
So this comes from Guiley's book, right?
This specific version, Guiley references it. Great book linked in the show notes. But this particular reading I summarized here comes from HistoryNet.
What is the title?
It's Did Lindbergh See My Smoke Monster? That's what I titled
it.
He
didn't see a physical form, though. Lindbergh, I think, did.
I don't know if Lindbergh did either.
Really?
Yeah.
One of the most famous alleged gremlin accounts from this period was made by none other than the renowned American aviator, author, inventor, military officer, explorer, and social activist, Charles Lindbergh. As he was engaged in his historic nonstop solo flight over the Atlantic from New York to Paris in May of 1927. In his autobiography, Lindbergh related what happened to him during the most critical period of the crossing, the 21st and 22nd hour just before dawn, when he had been without sleep for nearly 48 hours. Lindbergh reported that he had suddenly felt somewhat detached from reality and found himself surrounded by several vaporous, strange-looking beings within the cramped confines of his tiny cabin. The fuselage behind me becomes filled with ghostly presences, transparent, moving, riding weightless in the plane, Lindbergh wrote. I feel no surprise. Without turning my head, I see them, clearly. They then spoke to him and demonstrated incredibly complex knowledge of navigation and flight equipment. He goes on. These phantoms speak with human voices, friendly, vapor-like shapes, able to vanish or appear at will, to pass in and out through the walls of the fuselage as though no walls were there.
Fascinating.
Interestingly, in this case, rather than cause mischief, Lindbergh said that the gremlins actually kept him alert and reassured him that he would remain safe on his journey. Sounds more like guardian angels or something. Lindbergh kept this bizarre experience to himself for years until the account was finally published in his 1953 book, The Spirit of St. Louis. Interestingly, this would not be the only report of benevolent gremlin activity, as there were other accounts from time to time that told of the typically mischievous monsters helping pilots avert disasters or alerting them when to turn or change course or altitude, which showed there was more than one facet to whatever the things were.
Interesting, huh?
Yeah.
It's interesting, too, that this...
I don't know why gremlin, though.
Well, because...
It is the commonality of being appearing in a plane.
Right, and misty.
And either helping or hurting.
Yeah, a lot of the reports of these entities or shadowy, misty, half material, half energy or gaseous, almost like they're clouds mm-hmm. in a sense where they are kind of part physical matter,
they're interfacing,
denser. And my thought was maybe, okay, if there's anything real to this, maybe there are things that are more atmospheric based that can materialize in a denser form, like clouds can become mm-hmm. vapor and then actual water and fall. You know, maybe these things become physical so they can operate and interact with planes, this guy.
That's a cool idea.
Probably the truth.
I mean, obviously, the skeptical thing is, you know, he was on like a 9-hour flight and he could be tired and hungry. And
well, he was up 48 hours. according to this version, I heard a version where it was like 30 hours or something, but...
The complex knowledge thing reminds you of the machine elf stuff. Mm-hmm. They are always, you're getting this feeling in the DMT experiences that they have all this knowledge they're imparting or they're doing complex algebra.
Right. They know they're extremely advanced.
Yeah.
Way more than we are. But what's interesting is that the sleep deprivation, that's exactly what I experienced. We talked about the idea of your filter being removed. Mm-hmm. And a lot of these pilots would be flying. There was a old biker guy who was interviewed who had gremlin bells on his motorcycle. And they're basically, it's like a bell that hangs down under like the foot pedal or something. And the idea is going back to World War II when he was a bomber pilot, they would hang gremlin bells. And essentially it was to keep you focused if you started, quote, hallucinating from the pressure or the methamphetamines, the Adderall type stuff they gave you back then to fly nonstop, these long flights to keep you awake. With sleep deprivation, you do start to see things in the corner of your eye. You see these shadowy type movements and stuff. Mm-hmm. And, you know, his argument was that these bells would kind of bring you back or keep you focused.
So does the gremlin ring the bell?
The bell just wakes you up from that kind of
Gremlins were going to like...
Wake up, bud.
Yeah. But the question is, are there things that can be seen in these times of great stress, or is it just a psychological trick?
Yeah, it's interesting that conversation comes up again.
Yeah. Very interesting.
You got some modern accounts, I hear.
We do. So a more recent account, this actually comes from a pastor by the name of Pastor Swope. Now, he has a blog called The Paranormal Pastor. Be an interesting guy to talk to, I imagine. Chris, you want to read this one?
Plane tearing shadow creatures?
That's it.
That's terrifying.
Mm-hmm. Now this is, he retells a story that was told to him. So it's one of those from a friend of a friend.
Cool.
Type deals, but let's give it a shot.
All right. This comes from Pastor Swope. Ever since this Twilight Zone episode hit the airwaves in 1963, there have been very few pilots who have come forth with eyewitness activity of these creatures. Mostly for fear of ridicule, but many for fear that they will be grounded for a mental evaluation. But these demonic entities still have a fascination with dismantling aircraft in midair to this day. I helped out in a Christian bookstore owned by one of the members of my congregation for a few months a couple of years ago. His wife had passed away suddenly, and he was overwhelmed. One night we began to talk about the paranormal. As an ex-naval officer during the first Gulf War, he told me he had seen things he could not talk about. Quote, "I've seen things that come straight out of the X-Files while working on a certain aircraft carrier in the Gulf. I prodded and prodded, but he refused to tell me any details about UFOs or what exactly he meant by the common in connection with the government conspiracy theme that ran through the television program. But he did tell me that he and a few fellow servicemen on board did have encounters with little creatures of amazing power who have a fascination with airplanes. He had never fully seen them himself, but one time he witnessed a little shadowy creature tear a hole in the aircraft like it was made of aluminum foil to get at inside components. The creature dashed over the nose of the plane and disappeared. A pilot friend of his swore that he saw a small impish creature trying to rip off a flap of an F/A-18 Hornet of his wingmen on their way to a deployment over Iraq in the late light of the setting sun. 1 minute it was there, and as he turned to double-check what he had just seen, the creature had vanished. Within a few minutes, the co-pilot had to return to the carrier because his plane was becoming unresponsive." That's weird. Creepy. I don't want to see any shadowy little guys ripping things open in an airplane.
Well, especially you, man.
That's the thing with the gremlin thing, too, is it's terrifying because you're in such a vulnerable place. You are suspended in the sky.
Yeah, that's the freaky
you know?
Consequence.
It's like being attacked by a giant squid in the sea.
You just hit the eject button.
Yeah. That's what I would do. Why don't passengers get those? I guess because every time there'd be turbulence, you'd have people ejecting in an airplane.
Yeah,
I'd be out of there.
Might cause some pressure problems.
Yeah.
So I'm going to follow that up with, there's a comment on his, this is a short little one, but it's another one of those, like, my father told me, my grandfather, that kind of thing. And it's another anonymous comment, so take it as you will. "My grandfather's friend flew in World War II. He was about 19. He flew a bomber. He said one morning, I think it was Christmas Day, so that's timely, 1942, he was on a routine bombing run when all of a sudden he started hearing weird unearthly screams coming from an empty gun turret that had been shot all to hell. He said he kept smelling this weird smell, like no other smell he had smelled before. He said that it was so bad it made his eyes burn. Then all of a sudden, his plane just went into a nosedive. Then he said the screams turned into unearthly laughter. And he heard a demonic voice tell him, 'You're going to die.' He pulled out of the nosedive and he heard a gunshot from the back of the plane and his fellow airmen say, "I got the bastard." But then where did he go? Then his engines went and smoking holes were being ripped into the wings. He was forced to make an emergency landing in enemy territory. That's all the story I can remember.
Yuck.
Tall tale?
Or terrifying truth.
Covered up by the aviation authorities.
Gotta keep those gremlins quiet. Although they did, I mean, that was a big public thing for a long time, as we've talked about.
Oh, yeah. Well, that's, you know,
satirical.
It reminds me of the, I mean, if there's any reality to this and you don't want to scare pilots, it reminds me of the idea of, you know, controlling the story,
yeah.
Right? Fictionalizing something, poking fun at it.
Right.
Oh, like the, we talked about the underground base below the Denver airport, right? Remember they had that advertising campaign a little while ago? It was all about the Illuminati.
Or like
and stuff.
Leaning hard into it.
Leaning into the conspiracy. That's a great way to
discredit something.
Delegitimize something. You make fun of it and, you know, wear it as like a badge, you know.
Right.
Why would they do that if it was true? It's too dangerous. So who knows?
It's interesting. Obviously, this is a lot to buy into. I mean, the gremlin idea. But we've covered so many stories of little diminutive things being seen. I mean, that to me has become something that I totally think is possible.
And that's the question. Is this just another version of that?
Right.
Specifically triggered in the air.
Like how many gnome stories? Like when we started the show, we would get so many of all the things I thought people would be reporting. I thought more, you know, ghosts, alien abduction. We got those as well. But the gnomes thing was oddly prevalent. Maybe it's because people don't want to talk about that normally. So you don't hear about that because, you know, if you're going to get made fun of something, that would be the one to get made fun of for.
I mean, they're definitely like really bizarre stories. Just the whole pilot thing. When, you know, in the Twilight Zone, I didn't think that would be based on anything.
Exactly, yeah.
Yeah, it's interesting, like, even just the lore of it.
Mm-hmm.
There's a great scene in Gremlins where that great actor, B actor, he's been in tons of different like random horror stuff in 80s movies. He's in The Burbs. He's one of the dumpster guys.
Yeah.
Or the garbage truck guys.
He's in the, what's that famous werewolf film? Where he's like
the
guy who works in the occult bookstore. He's like a guy from Brooklyn or Boston something. He's always like, yeah, use a silver bullet.
Yeah, he was in that movie and it played a World War II vet.
Right.
And he talked about how like they came over here on the planes, the Japanese essentially like used him to sabotage us. That was
right.
We actually played it in our Halloween episode.
Oh, we did? We played his monologue?
I don't know if it was our first one. It was episode 31. When I was researching Gremlins, I came across one of our episodes like 20 references down. It's like, hey, that's us. But that's such a good clip.
Gremlins. You gotta watch out for the foreigners because they plant gremlins in their machinery. That's the same gremlins brought down our planes in the big one.
Big one.
That's right. World War II. Good old WWII. You know, they're still shipping them over here. They put them in the cars, they put them in the TV, they put them in the stereos and the radios. You stick in your ears, they put them in your watches.
I don't think it's such a good idea that you drive. Why don't you walk home?
You know, Katie, I think maybe I'll walk home.
Good.
That's a nice night.
Okay, there's one more story here.
So is this a contemporary account?
Yeah, so this comes from, and this is not an air flight one. This is, like I said, in a neighborhood. It's one of those things.
It could be like a little person's
trick of the eye. What did you see? But then kind of her suggestions after, just kind of interesting to think about. Do you guys remember Gremlins 2, I think it was, where there were different types of gremlins?
Oh, that's my favorite part.
I keep tying this into the movie.
They're thematic.
You're tying the movie, which is fiction, but there's the one.
Like the sexy gremlin and the scientist gremlin. And
like the Sinatra gremlin.
Mm-hmm.
But there was the electrical gremlin.
Right.
Mm-hmm. And it would go in and mess with computers and stuff.
Yeah.
People to this day, some people believe there's like a ghost in the machine. There are, even if they're entities, trickster entities or something other dimensional, that they can use this kind of etheric crossroad of the circuit to interact with our world through electricity. And there's, it goes back to the Benjamin Franklin thing.
Yeah, it's funny. I don't think about using the term gremlin. We talk about this all the time when something's trying to stop you from making a good recording on a topic or something like that. Yeah.
Anyways, this goes into that, the electrical idea. John, this is, I call it leering from the lamppost. And this comes from Fortiana Forums, which is a good place to get original stories from people that are interested in the paranormal and have had experiences. Okay, so this takes place in a town called Bidford. This might be in Britain. It's a medium-sized village, and it takes place on a little lane that was deserted at the time.
I have always seen things in the dark, but now I'm a rational grown-up. I'm long since past being scared of them. I know that the wolf in the hedgerow is a funny-shaped bush, and the monster on the back of the bedroom door is a dressing gown. It must have been about 10 years ago now, though, when something funny happened. I was a local newspaper reporter then and was leaving a parish council meeting in Bidford-on-Avon at about 9 to 10 p.m. one chilly night.
It was wintertime, a cold, dark night, and I was walking back to my car alone. I went to put the key in the door, and something made me look around behind me to a shape near the street lamp. I stood there and watched for what seemed like a while. The shape seemed to be a creature, about the same size, or a little smaller than 5'3", reminding me of that film, A Twilight Zone or something.
That's what we were referencing earlier.
Where there is a gremlin on the wing of a plane pulling off the nuts and bolts. I was watching and quite enjoying this illusion, not afraid at all, and then it seemed to give me a wicked, leering smile.
Ugh.
And jump behind the lamppost. I would have thought nothing more of it and forgotten it forevermore, except at the exact moment the shadow shape seemed to jump behind the lamppost, the light went out.
That's creepy.
I was stunned and quite shaken as I drove home. I didn't tell anyone at the time, but a year or two later, I told my husband at Christmas time. He laughed and said I was suffering from boredom hallucinations, which would be quite likely. Imagine having to report on Dibley Parish Council.
I don't need that line. I like that.
But he wasn't laughing when the dishwasher, cooker, and washing machine broke down all at the same time. All but the washing machine started again a few days later, but it was all rather inconvenient when I was cooking Christmas dinner. And I have sent this story before, or tried to, but it never got through.
Weird.
Something did happen, though. Only the biggest power cut in American history, I think a year or so ago. Yes, I am on AOL. Eek. What will happen this time? Sorry if my little pal is going to break your website. I got it.
So that connects to like the idea of, there's a theme with like, don't laugh at them. It's like any entity like that. You know, like if you don't feed them, show respect, that kind of stuff, they can turn bad. That's the kind of of idea. But
with the little people lore specifically.
Little people lore, the hidden folk, you know, leaving out gifts. And if you don't treat them with respect, and that goes into the lore we have now of gremlins.
I love that idea though, that she was looking at this thing. She's just enjoying this illusion that she knows isn't real in the dark. But then it seems to grin and then jump behind and then the light goes out.
Yeah.
Just weird timing.
That would definitely freak you out a little bit. Because the odds of you thinking you see something and then when you think you see it move, then the light goes out.
Yeah.
That'd definitely be a little freaky.
Interesting. That was a good one.
Yeah, I thought that was fun. And it's weird. A lot of these things happen around Christmas time. I don't know if that's just synchronous.
That too. Yeah.
It's weird.
Like several of the flight stories, this story, and then of course the movie.
Yeah.
This Christmas is just synchronistic. Unless they're all made up stories.
Well, it's weird too, because then you think about the connection with elves and Christmas.
Maybe there is a deeper reality to elves and Christmas.
There's an underlying code going on here.
You know how we talk about veil thinning during Halloween and the Samhain. Maybe during Christmas, there's an elf shower where they rain down
from the sky and onto your airplane.
There you go.
Interesting.
John agrees.
I agree. I agree with everything.
Good for you.
I believe in everything and agree with everyone.
And that's how you should always have a mind that believes in everything.
No critical thought.
I'm the opposite of a skeptic.
He's just a
gullible Gus. I believe everything all the time. Is there a name for that?
A sucker.
Sucker born every minute.
A boob.
A boob, if you will.
That word needs to come back. What a boob.
Quit being a boob.
I hope you guys enjoyed my best effort at deep diving.
That was fun.
It was interesting.
Yeah,
I liked it.
A lot more girth to that.
I will say.
To expect to feel.
Of all the stuff I came across.
Seems like there's something to it.
Yeah. Well, you know, I think like anything else, a lot of stuff can be connected. And there's a shared reality behind some of the stuff. I do think that this presentation was probably a little fuller. Like most stuff you try to find on YouTube, it's the same kind of stories or references that aren't really sourced too much. Mm-hmm. There is some good stuff I'll link in the show
notes. Or there's a complete just kind of shrugging it off because of some of the satirical stuff written in the 40s.
Exactly, yeah. And there is a really freaky story actually from the show Dark Waters. I'm sure some of you guys out there know that show. Allegedly true story submitted to this guy.
Yeah. Allegedly? Say that forever.
Great.
Look forward to that.
It's going to be one of those things where we just say allegedly from now on, and then eventually someone's going to be like, why do they say this? Yeah. They won't
be
know.
Like, hey guys, it's a soft G, okay? Yeah.
Pronounce it right. About that Dark Waters, he has a story, supposedly received 3 stories from listeners during all the COVID stuff going on, people in the hospitals, and the idea that there's mischief in the machines and stuff. So allegedly, there is an account of this person who wrote into him that works at a hospital, accounting or something, and he said that basically working with nurses and stuff, this first approached by one nurse who was just like freaking out, having a terrible time and saying that I just can't handle this anymore. And she mentions among all the stuff of, she was like losing a patient who's on oxygen. And she said this with all these machines breaking down and shadows moving about. She's like, I just can't stand all these freaking gremlins.
These gremlins are driving me insane.
Yeah, and he's like, what are you talking about? And then she goes on to tell this crazy story about this.
Yeah, if you want more good gremlin stories, definitely check that out.
Yeah, but I'll just summarize it. She essentially tells him that she had this woman on oxygen. She had the oxygen going and everything, and then she left the room, and the alarm started going off or whatever. She just came back into the room, and the oxygen tank was completely empty. And one of these things about gremlins...
And the woman was suffocating.
The woman was suffocating, and she stabilized her, and then she saw basically this gremlin thing, wispy, just like the Charles Lindbergh kind of thing and other reports, shadowy, wispy figure run under the bed. And she's like, okay, it's a trick in my eyes, but I'm going to look down. And she gets on her knees, looks under the bed, and there's this goblin.
This is a grin, sharp teeth.
Yeah, just staring at her.
That's terrifying.
And smiling, and then...
It's like straight out of a nightmare.
Yeah.
That's why when I wake up in the middle of the night, I always put my legs a little further out.
So I can't reach you?
Yeah.
Little gremlin arms?
It's a weird feeling, especially wake up from a nightmare.
Oh, yeah.
I know it's ridiculous, but...
What do you mean?
I don't like the feeling of that space underneath the bed, you know?
Yeah, oh, absolutely.
Like you don't know what's there. The night.
Wait, but what do you mean you put your legs further out?
Like when you step out of your bed and like right
oh,
below.
When you get out of your bed. I think you mean like when you're laying down. Yeah, when you get out of bed, you kind of like jump off.
I don't want them to
like
cut my Achilles heel.
Yeah, right. Slice it.
And then start gnawing on you?
I used to jump. I used to jump from my bed.
Oh, that's a little extreme.
Well, I was a kid. You know, I'll still do it, John.
I just don't get out of bed at night.
Yeah. Chris was like, wait, what do you mean? He was trying to understand your strategy because he needs strategy.
He has actually like a drone that lifts him.
Monkey bars, that lead to the door.
A fear carrier drone. It just lifts me out of bed.
A fear carrier drone.
Oh, the other thing I was going to say about that Dark Water story that's interesting is the idea that it like huffed the oxygen, sucked it all down. Mm-hmm. That's the theme in the aviation stories is that it would drink the petrol. Like any fluids and stuff, it would consume it. And what's weird, I think you see that kind of stuff in the Gremlins movie. Mm-hmm. They just consume everything and they'll be eating electronics and it all goes back to the lore. But it's interesting that if this story is real, you know, from the Dark Waters listener, that would be fascinating. The story, I mean, it goes on from there and gets more and more intense. And I think a little harder to believe just because more and more people see these things. And if it's true, it's fantastic. You guys check it out anyway if you haven't heard it. We'll put a link to that in the show notes. But anyway, yeah, hope you guys enjoyed this episode. And for us, Christmas time is coming up. So Merry Christmas to those of you who will be enjoying that. I guess we'll have one episode probably come out after Christmas. So stick around for that. But yeah.
Alrighty,
guys. Well, let us know your thoughts. Let us know if you've had any experiences with gremlins. Please tell us that you have. But don't lie.
We'll sniff it out.
Sniff it.
Well, thanks for joining us here on Gremlin Day.
We'll see you next time.
Yes, we will.
See ya.